friends, and welcome to the hashtag STRAsk podcast. I'm Tim Barnett, filling in for the wonderful Amy Hall. And with me is...
Spare the adjectives, brother.
Okay, I'm trying to come up with something to describe Greg. And there's a couple words going through my mind right now, but I'll keep those to myself.
All right.
And this is our fourth show together.
Yeah.
And this has been a lot of fun. We got a few questions here. Let's get right after it.
Got it.
Michelle asks this, how should we respond to someone who says, oh, so you're a Christian. Does that mean that you think I'm going to hell if I don't believe in God? Or they say, oh, so you're a Christian. Does that mean you think I'm going to hell because I'm gay? So there's kind of two challenges there.
Well, the best response in a situation like that is almost always to ask a clarification question. If for no other reason that it buys you some time, the questions are legitimate questions at face value, but the way they're asked in a circumstance, the way you just described it, is clearly a hostile situation. And it's an attempt to make you to cast our point of view in the most ugly way possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the first thing that I would suggest somebody say is, okay, well, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at. Help me to understand this. Okay, now with regards to the first question. When people say, you say that I'm going to hell, okay.
Yeah, because I don't believe in God.
Then I might ask this, and it's easy for me to think about this now or relax. I don't know if I'd always do so well in the moment, because sometimes I've been known to just blurt out something impolitic at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But if they said, well, look, I understand you Christians, you guys teach that Jesus is the only way of salvation. If I don't believe in your Jesus... Actually, the question is worded, if you don't believe in God, well, that's irrelevant whether a person believes in God. And so that might be the first thing that could be said. Well, don't believe in God? That's completely irrelevant whether a person believes in God, in my view. So why would you ask that? You know, toss another one back. But he said, okay, well, I understand. Okay, if I don't believe in God, if I don't believe in Jesus, then what's going to happen? Okay, and then I'll give you an illustration of how this worked out in a conversation that I have in the book on tactics. And I was talking to a person who's an attorney. I didn't know he was an attorney, but he asked me essentially the same question, not in such a harsh way, but about why it was necessary for him to believe in Jesus. And he was Jewish. He said, I try to live a good life and, you know, why do I need your Jesus, basically? And I said, let me ask you a question. Do you think that people who do wrong things, bad things, ought to be punished? And that's when he said, well, since I'm a prosecuting attorney, yeah, I think so. I said, good, I agree with you. Okay. Now, here's the question. Second question. Have you ever done any bad things? He said, well, I guess I have. And I said, so have I. I said, you know what I call that? What? Bad news. Notice we both agree that people who do bad things ought to be punished, and we both agree that we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what? Okay, and so what this is attempt to do is to show that our point of view that Jesus is the only way of salvation, I mean, from a theological perspective, is one that is necessitated by the circumstances. So what you do is you set up the answer by getting some affirmation from the other person about foundational elements that make the answer you're about to give sensible to them.
Yeah.
So do you think people do bad things? Well, they're thinking about other people, not them, should be punished. Now, if they say no, you say, really? You don't believe that people who do bad things should be punished? I mean, do you vote? Sure, I vote. Well, you're voting for somebody to pass laws that if they're broken, get punishment. People get punishment, right? So help me out here. What am I missing? Okay, I agree that people are – okay, great. If people do bad things, they ought to get punished. Have you ever done any bad things? Notice in both cases, it's a fair question, and I'm agreeing with them that mm-hmm. I agree that I think the same thing, and that I think people ought to be punished. You did bad things, and I've done those bad things. So that's bad news. Okay, now what? Now what before God? What did Jesus say? And so here I'm using a tactic called What a Friend We Have in Jesus, and that's in the new book, the 10th Anniversary Edition. And the idea is that you take a volatile challenge and you let Jesus do the answering rather than you, if Jesus has explicitly weighed in on an issue, which he has in this particular case. Well, Jesus said that he was the only way. He was the one who said it. And there's a reason he said it, because he made mercy possible for people who know they've done wrong and are guilty and deserve punishment. Okay, now what's the alternative? See, and so what you're doing is you're trying to answer the question and preach the gospel in a subtle way at the same time.
Yeah.
And we're trying to show that this isn't bizarre. This isn't unusual. It comes from the mouth of Jesus, who many people respect. And he said it for a reason, because people are in big trouble. And so he's offering a gift of forgiveness. So that would be the entree into a further conversation about these things. I won't go on to the whole conversation, because it's hard to tell what people are going to say and how to respond. Mm-hmm. But notice how I start with a question to buy me some time for clarification. If the thing is, if you don't believe in God, you're going to hell. Well, belief in God is not the factor, okay? And what we mean by that is that even if you believe in God, that's not going to rescue you, because belief in God is not the issue. It's something else, okay? And then there's other questions that come in about Jesus' necessity that has to do with their guilt and their the punishment that is due them and me and the rest of us. So Jesus came to provide a way of rescue. And if you want another metaphor besides the legal metaphor, you can ask when people get sick, there are antidotes to sickness. Not any old antidote will do. And when you have a real extreme sickness of a very particular kind, sometimes there's only one antidote. Mm-hmm. So singular problems, I put it in Story of Reality, singular problems often require singular solutions. And that's the case here with salvation. So that's the way I would approach that. Now, the second half is I'm going to hell because I'm gay. And I ask the question, tell me, what do you mean by that? And let them talk a little bit. You're engaging in conversation. One way to answer it, now this might be controversial to some people. I'm pausing for a moment because I'm thinking of another clarification question I need. When you say, because you're gay, to what are you referring? Are you saying, am I going to hell because I experience same-sex attraction? Okay, that might be what they have in mind. Mm-hmm. Or they may be referring to their activities in light of their same-sex attraction. Well, if he says, I am sexually attracted to other men. I said, no, you're not going to hell because you're sexually attracted to other men. Just like I'm not going to hell because I'm sexually attracted to women other than my wife. Mm-hmm. That's what I do about that. Okay. But the issue isn't whether a person is gay or not. Even if a person isn't gay, they are still liable to God for the same reasons that I explained in the previous iteration of this question, because we're sinners. If it's not one thing, it's another thing. The point that we're trying to make in general is that human beings are in deep trouble for a whole host of reasons, if not one reason, another reason, and God is there offering mercy. Now, if the person wants to know, on my view, does God think that homosexuality is wrong in its behavior? The answer is yes. God made the world a certain way, and he expected it to work a certain way, and that is a violation of what he wants. But it's not. If that wasn't the issue, something else would be. Same with me. And so what we want to do is try to make, in a certain sense, odd common cause with the gay person, in that I'm in just as much deep water as you are, but for a different reason. Two of us are in prison. So what did you do? Oh, I didn't do that. I did this. We're both in jail, you know, being punished for crimes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the general approach. But it's hard. I can appreciate it. Being asked the question like that is hard because, bang, there it is. And if you're a Christian, they probably suspect what your general convictions are. And what you want to do is you want to buy some time and soften the challenge in a way that the truth does not sound so bizarre to the person, I guess is the best way to put that.
Greg, I noticed as you were, you know, answering the question, you were giving the bad news, the good news there, you never used the word sin. And I think that's a strategic, there's a strategic reason for that.
Yes.
If people read the book Tactics, they'll kind of find out why that is. Can you explain just to our listeners?
Yeah, one of the many tactics I call is watch your language. And the point there is to encourage Christians to abandon what has become empty religious noise to a lot of people and find synonyms that will substitute for those words. So I avoid the word sin, but I don't avoid the issue of sin. I talk about our sovereign, our rebellion against God, breaking his laws, being guilty before him. Mm-hmm. I don't talk about blowing it and messing up. And we've all, we all have our little peccadilloes. Well, it's not a little peccadillo. It's outright rebellion against the sovereign of the universe, you know. So the morally perfect standard of all other morality, that's a big deal. So we don't minimize it. But my goal is not to minimize it by not using the word sin, but trying not to use a word that is inappropriately inflammatory. I mean, it is appropriate to talk about the issue of sin, but if the word sin itself is just, oh, there you go, you're clubbing me with this word, mm-hmm. then I'm not getting the job done that I want to get done. If I can find a synonym that doesn't sound more as objectionable to a person but does the same work with regards to the truth of the matter, I'm going to try to do that. And that's what I talk about in the mini tactic in the 10th anniversary edition of Tactics, the mini tactic called Watch Your Language. I have written about that online too, and people can find that piece.
Perfect. So there you go. Watch your language, folks. Let's go to Josh Cornercutter. Cornercutter. He says, my friend is a Christian and told me that he sometimes listens to Joel Osteen, because he likes his positive message. What in Joel's teaching is wrong, and how should I approach this topic with my friend?
Okay. Here's the question. What exactly is Joel Osteen's positive message? And listen, it's fine to like people who are upbeat and have a bright outlook on life and are cheerful and finds the good and the bad and the silver lining and all that other stuff. But when the positive message is a lie, that God wants health, wealth, and prosperity for Christians and for every person and name it and claim it, and the church is built on that theology, yeah, and not built on the gospel, then it's a false message. Even if it's cheerful, makes me feel good. Good preaching shouldn't make you feel good necessarily. Good preaching should tell you the truth. And if the truth hurts, okay. It should hurt in some cases. Certain truths do hurt, you know, like our guilt and our need for change and need for repentance of particular things. And that's what good preaching is meant to do. Good preaching is not meant to help people feel good about doing bad. So if Joel Osteen is a if he's just like a PMA speaker, positive mental attitude, and maybe some value to that. You listen to these people, and I think having a good attitude about things, certain looking on the bright side, has a certain virtue to it and can help certain people who need that. Okay, but when somebody makes PMA the gospel, and that you're going to be saved by your positive mental attitude or something like that, well, now they're not telling the truth.
Yeah.
So I don't have any problem with motivational speakers per se. I have a problem with Christian pastors who are preaching a false gospel that makes people feel good. Remember, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, it says, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, right? They will accumulate to themselves teachers according to their own desires and turn away from the truth and turn towards fables. Mm-hmm. And I think this is largely what Joel Osteen is doing. So I think I would give a strong warning there. And notice how I started with a couple of questions. So what is it that Joel Osteen says that makes you feel good? Does Joel Osteen ever say anything that makes you feel bad? If a person is a faithful preacher of Scripture, are there going to be things that that person is going to preach that will make people feel bad? I mean, I think the answers to those things are pretty obvious, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, if they're faithful. Then if he's not preaching anything that makes anybody feel bad, then how are they going to deal with the thing that is the biggest problem, their sin? So maybe that kind of sequence of questions would help.
That's good. Let's go to this last question, just from Anonymous. My question has to do with a friend who finds the teaching of Kierkegaard.
By the way, that person has written a lot of books. And he's the author of so many bright, clever, intelligent phrases. That guy, Anonymous, is all over the place. Yeah.
They got a big question here, though. So even Anonymous has a question. I guess their friend finds the teachings of Kierkegaard and Camus appealing. What is the Christian response to absurdism? They called absurdism.
Well, I don't know if Kierkegaard taught that. I mean, I'm a little out of my ken here, even though my master's degree is in philosophy. I didn't study those guys. It was minus philosophy of religion. That's the emphasis, and ethics. Kierkegaard was a Christian.
Yeah.
And it seems undoubtedly so, that embraced a number of different things that maybe a lot of Christians today would not embrace. Okay, Camus was not, as far as I know, and kind of preached a doctrine of despair, which is true of classical existentialists.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't speak directly to the issue there. There are friends that I have had that think a lot of Kierkegaard, love him, and have gained – Christian friends – and that have gained tremendously from him. I think these two fall into two different categories, and I actually think that maybe for the word existential means something different to each of them. Mm-hmm. Existentialism is a philosophy, okay? It's a world view. In fact, in Sayers' book on worldviews, James Sayers' book on worldviews, there's a the later editions have a whole chapter on existentialism, and it's really good. And I read it, but I can't remember much of it at the moment to be able to give you a sum of it. But that's a good place to go. And maybe he makes the distinction between a Camus and a Kierkegaard in terms of their existentialism.
Yeah. There's a really good talk that William Lane Craig gives, and it's called something like The Absurdity of Life Without God.
Hmm.
And where he goes through and he quotes from Camus and some other existentialists who agree their atheism, their nihilism dictates that the only real question is whether or not to kill yourself is, you know, because all of life is meaningless. There's no purpose in the universe.
Right.
Now there are, you know, the new atheist types, they're the ones who say, yes, the universe is purposeless. There is no meaning objectively, you know, Richard Dawkins and others, but they'll say, well, you can make your own subjective, you know, meaning and purpose.
Right.
Camus and some of these other existentialists said, well, even if you made your own subjective meaning, it's not really meaningful.
It's an empty enterprise.
That's right.
Interest, right.
It's just you're collecting shells or whatever until your time ends.
Yeah,
you know,
basically they hold the same view, but what the new atheists do is they glamorize nihilism.
Yeah.
Because that means you could do whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy. But you see, then how is it that they can find any moral basis for objecting to anyone pursuing their own self-interests, which they do? But there's no basis for that. Well, wait a minute. This guy's Mother Teresa, this guy's Hitler, you know. I mean, not a guy, Mother Teresa, but this moving in that direction, that kind of thing. And the other one is a totalitarian sex slave trader or whatever. So now what? I do talk about this particular point in the story of reality. You know, if you want to go that way, all right. But just keep in mind that there's no purpose that's better than any other individual purpose. It just suits you. That's all you can say. It's better for me, but you can't say it's better in the big sense because there is no big sense in the world. And so what are you going to do with Drake the slave trader? You know? Oh, we got this really nice lady who's helping the poor, and then you got the slave trader. That's their purpose. You can't say that the one is better than the other. It's just different. That's all it is. And that seems wildly counterintuitive.
That's good, Greg. I think that's all the time we have for today.
Yeah, I think so.
I really appreciate...
We'll end on the slave trader.
Yeah.
Dirk the slave trader.
It's a good illustration, though. Well, thanks to all those who sent in their questions, including Mr. Anonymous, who I think sends in quite a few.
Yeah. And usually he has much to contribute to...
Yeah, to the discussion.
Him and Confucius.
Yeah. If you would like your question answered, you can just go over to Twitter and type your question in, include hashtag STRask, and that's how we'll find it. Until then, this is Tim Barnett with Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.